Sometimes it can feel like food has an emotional control over you. Well, it's time to show your food who's boss with Noom. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 379. I can't believe it's been this well. There's been episodes before this one, but tonight we bring back my first guest on Benched with Bubba when the audio quality was probably the best thing you've ever heard since sliced bread. My intros were even worse than they are now. All the stuff was just amazing, but he's been awesome. We literally just talked Giants Dodgers for like an hour. And it was so much fun. He's a great dude. He's like 30,000 times more athletic than I am because he actually gets off his butt and does things. He goes in camps and sees the wilderness. He does great DFS work, great fantasy work. You can find him on Twitter at Brock Ness Monster and over at FTN Daily. Brock Miller, how you doing, my friend?
I am doing well. I'm excited for the weekend. It's been a long week for me. There's been so much baseball news to digest this week, but Not to jump ahead too much. I want to mention, since we got on this call a few minutes ago, we're talking about some other things, and I've been trying to scroll back through Twitter here, through our Twitter history, our interactions together, to see how long we've been Twitter homies, because it's been a long time.
Oh, and wow.
You know, you mentioned that first podcast that we did, and yeah, so I'm seeing the first tweet. This was with MLB Model and Brian Capper. And then the two of us, and we were, man, I don't know what we were talking about there. That was something about tattoos. Anyway, that is May 2015. So that is just over 6 years ago when we became Twitter homies there. And then, the rest is history, man.
It is. It's all history. It's been fun. Lots of fantasy fun. Lots of just fun in general. It's been fun watching you, do the – I'm a, all your athletic achievements, like you're doing your competitions, you're running, you're box jumping. I see all your stuff. You're a crazy man. So it's awesome to see. And you're healthy, which is great. Like you had a little scare there. So I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're getting to chat with us, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't be more happy to be able to find a little bit of time to fit in, to hang out and talk baseball with my homies. I do it as often as I can. Like you mentioned, the FTN pod. FTN Daily, do some daily stuff there. And then just, man, it's been a great season for me. A lot of different people have reached out and done a podcast with me, been a guest in a few different spots. And, like I said, kind of circling back to where it all started.
Yep, circling back. Speaking of the season as a whole, before we really dive into everything, you said it's been crazy news this week. It seems like every time I do a podcast, I try not to start out with the negative stuff. That's like all we have these days. How have you been dealing with this? I know you play in some big leagues. You play in a lot of leagues. How are you handling it? Because everyone's trying to do it differently, scrambling, basically.
You know, honestly, I thank God I really only have one daily league. It's like a Roto Grinders league that I'm in where – you know, every day I got to get in there and take a look. Okay, who got hurt? Who am I pulling out? It's been nonstop with that league. It's surprisingly gone well because as frustrating as it's felt, just the action of getting in there and grabbing Bregman, grabbing Josh Donaldson or whoever and sliding those guys out of your lineup, as frustrating as that feels, That feeling's, it's mutual. Everybody's feeling that feeling. Everybody's moving guys out. So as unlucky as it maybe has felt so far this season, I mean, everybody's kind of in that boat.
Yeah, no, that's a key thing that I've tried to emphasize from time to time when people come and ask me questions or something. I'm like, you're not the only one dealing with this. And if you think you're the only one and someone says they aren't, they're going to. Like, it's going full circle at one point or another. No one's leaving this. It's like Game of Thrones. No one's leaving this one unscathed. Like, it's coming for you. Just wait for it. It doesn't matter who you have. Like, I saw Matty Davis. He tweeted out the other day, I think his top four or five picks from Vegas are all on the IL. I know Scott Jensted is like, TGFBI teams on the IL. It's crazy stuff, my friend. But you mentioned your daily league. I know you're playing some NFBC leagues. Like NFBC, obviously no trades. I'm just going to jump to the tweet from earlier, which is really, really interesting to me. You have a fun little, let's say, trade that was offered to you earlier. Just how bananas is that trade? Like, I'm trying to pull it up right now. I took a picture of it because it'll make this better. It was where the heck did I put it? Yes, there it is. Okay, so you were going to trade Jose Altuve, Ketel Marte, and Sean Manaea, and they were going to give you Jorge Soler, Whit Merrifield, and Dylan Bundy. But what makes it even better is I always love when someone tells you, you need stolen bases, and Merrifield has half of what your entire team has. I always love when someone tries to tell me what I need in a trade. So how'd that go for you?
You know, and it's funny, too, and you, I don't want to make that person feel bad. Maybe they're listening right now. I don't think they are. But I – when I first saw the trade, I mean, I was like laughing it off, and I didn't even see that little note that they had put on there. And I was taking a look, and I'm like, okay, like it for what it's worth, it is a rotisserie league. It's on ESPN. It's not an NFBC league, you know, being that it's a trade offer. But it is categories, and they're right. I think I'm a little bit back in stolen bases, but I've been between first and second place in that league in the last couple of weeks or whatever. I took a look at their, I just tried to see it through their lenses. I tried to look like, okay, a little bit of a bump in stolen bases there. Obviously Altuve's done stealing. I don't think that's ever coming back or whatever. But I mean, Altuve's been great. I'm taking a look, you know, Witt's kind of tailed off. You know, he started off that first week. He hit like two or three home runs the first week of the season. And of course all the steals, and the steals have been great, but you know, Witt's really tailed off since then. I mean, I'm almost looking at it as like, I don't know that I would do Altuve for Witt straight up. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you take a look like, okay. And Sean Manaea for Dylan Bundy. Who hasn't been on Twitter this week and hasn't tweeted out that that's it, I'm done with Bundy. I give up. I mean, so a big step down there for the pitcher there. I can't. What did you think? I mean, like,
yeah.
I mean, it is a bit of a home league. Maybe they're just
those will happen.
Some
those
kind of a happen. Homer there, but I mean, it took 2 seconds to take a look there and be like, "Hey, man, that's a downgrade at every single one of those guys that I'm trading away."
Yeah, but that's why I want to bring it up again. It's no like shot at the person because I don't even know who it is, but it's more like the trade etiquette. And it, again, NFBC, you can't make trades, but a lot of people are trading, especially with these injuries and leagues with ILs, the waiver wires are just empty. So you have to make trades. Like, you're going to have to do things like that to make it work. You have to go in there. And I've heard some really, really good people that trade a lot. Like they've said it, you almost have to go in there. If you're offering the trade on paper, maybe you're losing it a little bit, but you'll actually get it to go through. So you get the players you need. Don't go into every trade thinking you're going to smoke somebody, because all you're going to do is make someone angry and then everyone will trade with you again. So it was just an interesting, like, I saw that. I'm like, well, that's a fun little mini discussion we could have. Like, do you have any other tips on trades? Because trades are tough, because trades can make people angry at each other. Trades, there's a lot of ego involved and a lot of idea, I got better than you did type thing.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when I look to do trades in, you know, I've only got the couple ESPN leagues that allow the trades. So making trades is not a big part of my process as far as season-long fantasy baseball goes. But I have been trying to, you know, peruse a couple trades in both of the two leagues that I'm able to. You know, I've been looking at, you know, how can I get some upgrades and stuff like that. And I kind of looked through it, you know, just like a real easy way to kind of come up with a good framework of a trade that might make it through, that'll make you some money, make you some stats, whatever you want to call it. You know, take a look, you know, if you can find a guy in your team that was picked like 80th, 90th overall, and you find somebody on their team that was picked like 80th, 90th overall, and maybe the guy on the other team is a little bit more balanced and has those stolen bases, maybe, you know, like for instance, I mean, it's not like a perfect, let's think like Ketel Marte for Whit Merrifield. You know, both those guys were in like the 30 and, you know, no, Ketel Marte was further back. He was after 50. He was like, was he in the 60 or 70?
He was Jose Altuve range.
Yeah, he was back there. Yeah, Altuve like 90th, which, you know, I have both of those two guys in all the leagues. I drafted them all because both of them looked like huge values. And of course, without that injury to Marte, I think that, you know, probably would have looked like they have ended up to be great bargains. But anyway, back to the question, it's like, you know, if you can find two guys that, you know, look at where they're ranked preseason, you know, most guys, their values from here forward probably shouldn't have changed a whole lot, you know, whether they're out the last 2 months or they're out for half of it, or maybe if they underperformed a little bit, our outlook on them for the rest of the season probably hasn't changed a whole lot, maybe a little. So if you can look for a trade where, you know, you can get a little bit of an upgrade that way, like it would have been an upgrade in March. But looking at it now, because maybe that guy had a few, you know, really bad weeks, maybe he was playing hurt. If that's going to help you push together, you know, get a trade, I mean, you know, look at the rest of the season, just kind of based on the way that you looked at it in March, it probably hasn't changed a whole lot.
Yeah, 100% with you there. That's a good way to look at it. The other thing I would recommend, because it's so tilting at times, don't offer like a 3-for-1 or something, because in the end, you still have to drop two more guys. So is it really a 3-for-1? No, you have to, like, when you look at the trade, you got to picture the whole package. Like, who are you getting rid of? Who are you doing this? Now is it as what you really need, or is it not, type thing? Like, it's always good to get that big name and give up three pieces, you think. But at the same time, like, how are you replacing things and moving that around? It makes it almost even harder to make that trade. Let's make an even trade. Let's get the pieces across. And it's not easy, but it's very doable too, because I see a lot of guys that trade often, and they make it work pretty well. So,
well, and also too, if, you know, if your trade looks like two guys pretty similar players, and then these two guys are two pitchers that are pretty similar players, and then the third guy, one guy is like basically droppable, and the other guy was an 80th overall pick.
Yeah,
probably not going to work.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of do some work into it before you you hit the send button, and you'll be surprised what can come out of it too. So just a little something to think about. Let's talk about some recent news real quick. Jacob DeGrom, he left with a shoulder injury after 3 innings, striking out 8 in 9. Perfect game. He had 3 perfect innings. The guy is ridiculous. Like, you play DFS, the dude still put up almost 23 DK points in 3 innings. Like, it's absolutely bananas what he does. But the shame of it is, it's every start now, it's like, whoa, what are we doing? He had the MRI. Results came back. They think he's okay. Probably a small AL since what they're hoping for. You're obviously not dropping Jacob DeGrom. But what are you doing with him going forward? If you want to make it a DFS perspective, you want to make it a season long, this seems like he's going to have some kind of lingering. It's a different injury every time.
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. It feels like, and I probably saw something along this line on Twitter, and I wish I could remember, you know, who wrote it so I could give them credit. But it feels like to me, like, you know, one of those injuries happen and maybe there's a little compensation for it. And then that compensation, that next start causes a little bit of soreness elsewhere. And then you get to the next start and there's another kind of a little compensation there that's causing that one. What's absolutely wild to me, what I really want to talk about here is the fact that a different injury, something that, you know, so going based on that premise that, you know, he was compensating for something, you know, a little bit there, and he's still got the best command out of anybody in baseball, and it's not even super close. I wrote a tweet yesterday. I thought it was pretty good. The best pitcher in baseball is definitely Jacob DeGrom, but what's amazing is the second best pitcher in baseball is injured Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. What are we going to do with Jacob DeGrom? I kind of, you know, DFS is just such an absolute monster of a mind game. In DFS, I'm just going to do whatever's not popular.
Yeah.
If it feels like everybody's feeling comfortable using him in the next start, and he's going to be like he is on a lot of slates, like 70% owned or whatever, like, yeah, there's, I don't think, you know, 70% when when you take a look at the chances that maybe has a start where he looks like a human, not a lot of chance there, but still there's something in there. But the odds that he leaves a little bit early, you know, when you weigh that out, 70%, no thanks. If everybody's scared off of him, like, oh man, I'm not going to put my eggs in that basket. He's probably hurt. He's probably coming out early. Like, oh man, if I can get Jacob DeGrom at 25% owned on a normal slate, absolutely, I'm going to do that. That's kind of worth it there. So as far as DFS goes, you know, my decision's not going to be based a whole lot on Jacob DeGrom. But as far as season long, I mean, you just the same thing we're doing with crypto. just close your eyes, cross your fingers, and just hope for the best. Season long, I'm going to leave him in there. If they're going to start him, I'm going to leave him out there. I can't. When's his next start going to come? What is it?
It'd be like Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, it would be like the weekend or whatever. So Sunday night when we have to really make this decision, we're probably going to have a lot more information to make that decision on. So things will probably change between now and decision-making time there. But we'll just have to see how that next start goes.
Yeah, I'd imagine an IL stint's coming. Like, they need to just let the dude sit for a little bit and get it together. But Phil Dussault is a very, very intelligent man. He's the robot for a reason. He can do stats like crazy. He put a tweet out earlier today, and some met it with some controversy. But, you know, DeGrom, 0.059 ERA so far, which is just bananas. Now, if for some godforsaken reason he misses the rest of the season, like if this injury somehow turns into something crazy, you could replace him with, like, say he picked like an average player, Bruce Zimmerman. Yeah, off the waiver wire, use his rest of season projections, and he'd still have like an ERA in the low threes and be like a value of a second round draft pick, I think, if we started to see whatever his final total was. It was just crazy. That's how good Jacob DeGrom is. That was the whole point of my statement there. He's been ridiculous, and you're going to play him regardless, but I just hope he gets healthy and can play. Because the other thing is, I think you quote tweeted it the other day, that thread where all of his players he's been with or has like former players all saying there's no, he does not use sticky stuff, he's that good, was one of the coolest threads I've ever seen. Like, no, he's that filthy, like that filthy. So yeah, we'll see. Tyler Glasnow, a guy that does use sticky stuff, he's talked about it. He actually, to me, I don't mind the sunscreen and rosin thing. That's like command. That's not that I'm going to try to throw the spinniest of spinny to you, but that's a whole other, we'll discuss that later. But he said he did not use it this last time out, and he was gripping the ball harder. That could have led to his injury. Who knows? UCL injury, they moved to the 60-day IL. He's pretty much done for the season is the way I look at things. So we're pretty much done with Glass now. But they're for now putting Waka in his spot. The hope is eventually Patino maybe. How would you go? But say you had Glass now, what Rays pitcher maybe would you be looking at?
That's a tough one. I mean, if I'm cutting Glass now, I mean, I'm going to take a look around, and it might not necessarily be somebody from the Rays that I'm going to look to replace him with. But Patino is definitely interesting. Absolute blue chip prospect from years past when he was a San Diego prospect there. I think Patino is somebody. It's really going to depend on the type of league you're in. I mean, you're going to want to try to grab Patino and you're going to stick him on the bench for a while. You're going to have to see what happens there. You know, Waka is somebody I know that he's pitched well in Tampa Bay. It doesn't surprise me that maybe Tampa Bay's made some adjustments to the way that he's approaching his starts that are making a little bit better results there. But he's also just been kind of an opener guy. So Waka is somebody that, you know, if they go and stretch him out and they're going to try and use him as more of a traditional starter going forward, then I'm probably going to expect a little bit more the Waka that we've seen before than the one that we've been seeing that, you know, he's going to pitch two innings. So he's able to go out there and kind of give 100% for those two innings there. So probably not going to expect, you know, I'm not going to just take his numbers from the first 2 months of the season and extrapolate them out and say, okay, this is the guy that I got right now. Yeah, Waka is not going to be super interesting to me.
He's a tough guy to get on these days. Like you mentioned, the two inning thing, you can make that work for sure. You can kind of hide the warts in that scenario. But even like Steamer rest of the season, they got him throwing 52 innings with an ERA of almost 4.5 still. So, and they strike out. Yeah, it's going to be tough to make that. It's definitely not the same as Tyler Glasnow, folks. But you're not going to find Tyler Glasnow on the waiver wire. Patino would be good. It's just a matter, like you said, do they let him go? They have a lot of options that could be a opener type situation for the Rays. Josh Donaldson left with a calf injury. The dude just it's getting frustrating. I didn't draft him just because I knew there would be headaches with him, but the talent's there. It's really, really good. If you're into Donaldson, what do you you're putting him on the IL, but what level of confidence do you have in him going forward?
I mean, mostly just as a baseball fan, that hurts. I'm super bummed because when Donaldson's going well, when he's healthy, he's a lot of fun to watch play. He's so good. He's one of those guys. He's fun for DFS because he feels a little bit predictable. We know what he can do because he's done it for so long. But what am I doing with Donaldson? I actually have him on a few teams. I mean, he was going in like the 180, 200 overall range preseason, which, man, if you – I mean, I guess feels like a little bit of a pipe dream, but if you were going to get 140 games out of Donaldson, he'd blow the value out of the water for, you know, 180th, 200th overall. The risk was there. We knew what the risk was, and here we are. The calf injury specifically, you know, Donaldson's been a little bit injury prone in his career, but these last couple years has been the calf pretty much every time, right?
Yeah,
I think it's almost every time.
It's pretty much always been the calf. Yeah,
last year it started out with the calf. He made it back for like 20 minutes, and he was back on the IL with the calf. It you know obviously last year was short, but it pretty much wiped out the year for him last year. It's just seems like it's going to be more of that this year. You know, maybe he'll be back in a month, and maybe we can squeeze a few awesome weeks out of him, and then odds are we'll be right back at it.
Yeah, it's just the same headache with him. It just sucks. Like you said, as a baseball fan, you want him to stay out there because he's just been absolutely outstanding. But it's going to be a grind, and it seems like it's taking longer and longer to get back every time too. So that's kind of the bummer in that situation. It's like if watch the reports, like Brock said earlier, it's only Thursday night, so you got a few days to get more news coming out. But if you get news Saturday or Sunday, it's a month plus. Like if it's a month plus, Brock, do you drop him in a league where you don't have IL spots?
Yep.
Yeah.
I really wanted to think about it, but I mean, if you don't have ILs, I'm thinking, you know, in an OC, you know, you can't go a month, you can't go 6 weeks, with the dead spot there. You know, if it was somebody that I really felt great about, like this is a freak thing, like if he got hit with the pitch and something happened or whatever, like a completely freak injury, maybe you consider something like that. But, you know, the odds are, like I said, the odds are he comes back and, you know, things are cool for a couple weeks. And, man, you know, it just seems like it's going to pop back up again. Well, I just don't know that there's a solution. You know, like whatever, the elbow goes in the pitcher, they get Tommy John, and it sucks because it takes a long time. But they come back. Like the calf issue that he has, I've tried to look it up. I don't even know how to pronounce that, the pro whatever it is. I don't know that there's a solution for that.
Yeah, it's those soft tissue muscle type injuries that there's really no rhyme or reason when they're actually healed type deal. It's like it's healthy enough to play, but how much do you re-aggravate it? It seems like the more you do it, the more easily they re-aggravate. It's going to be tricky, but let's talk about another guy here, Alex Bregman. He left Wednesday night's game with a quad injury, and reports initially were from like Dusty Baker and the guys that said he's going to be out for a while. That was the explanation they give. Like it was a bad type deal. So another scenario, if we get a couple days here now and Bregman's obviously different than Josh Donaldson, is Bregman a guy you try to hold on to even if it's a month or so?
I think I'm kind of getting bailed out on this question because when push comes to shove, we're not going to know. We're not going to know if Dusty Baker's words a while means a month. Or if it means 3 months or, you know, 5 months like Eloy Jimenez, we're not going to know. You know, Bregman is different from Donaldson. You know, like I mentioned, Donaldson, you know, you spent a 200th overall pick on him. He's probably your corner infield guy, maybe a utility guy for you. You know, Bregman's different. You know, you spent a top 40, top 50 pick on Bregman. I think – The big difference is, you know, I guess the correct question here is how long until we're going to get some news on him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some real news.
Yeah, right. If we get to Sunday and we still haven't heard anything, is it going to kill you to hold on to him on Sunday and see if maybe middle of next week we finally got some results? I mean, whatever. The injury happened yesterday. It'll be a couple days before they, you know, I'm guessing they did some kind of an MRI, but like when swelling's up, I mean, there's still things happening. They're still not going to know yet. I can see this weekend I'm going to hold Bregman and see what happens. And if we don't have any news during at some point next week, kind of telling us, okay, we're looking at 4 to 6 weeks or he's done for the year, at that point, you know, maybe the following weekend we're going to cut bait. But the difference of next weekend versus the following weekend, I think we need to wait on that news.
100% agree. You said that very, very perfectly. Bregman's one of those guys. He was a, you know, second round pick or something. He's not a guy you're just going to drop until you get that. Like you need that. Hey, he's out like 2 to 3 months or something. Like you need that big, like even a month. I'm thinking I'm going to try to hold him as long as possible. Now I'm like 2 weeks. If I have so many other things, I need to make moves. Yeah. Bregman might be the one that hits the chopping block, but for now you kind of wait and hold out hope that maybe he heals faster than you think. It's a 2 to 3 week injury or something and you're good to go. Cause his talent level is too good, especially in that Houston offense, which is on fire right now. As we're talking, they have a 10 spot on the White Sox. They roughed up Dylan Cease. My question for you on that one, though, is Abraham Toro got the start. I've never been overly impressed with Abraham Toro, but he did go deep. He went deep tonight. If you're desperate, 15-team leagues, is this a guy that's going to run out there every day? Are you throwing any type of bid out on him?
Well, I mean, how much is he going to play? Because Dusty Baker really does like Aledmys Diaz. Right?
That's true. That's true.
I mean, Dusty is a big fan of Aledmys Diaz and
Dusty and his veterans, man. Dusty and his veterans, man.
These old guys, man. Him and Tony La Russa. I mean, he's obviously a lot more likable than Tony La Russa. But Toro. There's got to be other options out there for me. Yeah, I mean, Toro. He's not particularly young. I didn't pull up his page. Not particularly young or anything like that.
He's 24. I'll be 25 in December, so he's young.
Okay. If it's a lot of other teams, then, you know, maybe you give him a look because they're going to give him a look, but I think at best he's going to split time with old Diaz there.
That's a great point. I wouldn't be shocked if Diaz fully healthy would probably get a healthy run over there at third base, and just he might actually be worth picking up, especially if there's a lot of lefties pitching that week. He's been sneaky decent, so I could see that.
And you know, he's a guy, he's definitely done it before. He's gone on a streak before. I mean, he's looked like a really good hitter for like an entire month at a time before. You know, he's somebody that maybe you can try and take a chance on and catch lightning in a bottle. He's been capable of that. I think over the course of a full season, he's going to be a little exposed. He's not really a guy that needs to be starting on very many teams there, but you could probably do worse for a couple weeks.
No doubt about it. Eloy Jimenez, good news. We have good news, people. He got cleared for baseball activities. Obviously, that means he's still a little ways away, but in a world of injury after injury, I was trying to play optimistic the other day. A couple people squashed it, but nicely. It was surprising, a nice squash on Twitter. But I said, okay, if he starts to train now, maybe in like 6 weeks, let's say August, between August 1st and August 15th even, we might get anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks of Eloy Jimenez to finish out the season, which would be awesome. He got dropped in many leagues because the early reports, Brock, where he's done for the season. Like, he's shoulder or the chest done. When do you start trying to pick him up? Because, like we've talked before, you can't really hold that empty weight for too long. But if you wait too long, he's going to get grabbed for really cheap and it's going to backfire. So when do you want to start going after him?
It depends. Sorry to preface every answer that I have with that.
But it does depend. Everything's team dependent, league dependent, 100%.
It really does. I've got some teams where my offense is great and I'm probably not going to think about it too much if, you know, like the time that he goes out and starts his rehab assignment, if he's still available, then maybe I'm going to jump the gun there or whatever. If it's a team where, hey, this team's decent, but man, the outfield is really bad, and I could really use a shot in the arm for the offense, maybe I'm going to be a little bit more willing, like, you know, maybe a week before that rehab starts, maybe 2 weeks before that rehab starts. You just got to gauge how bad you're going to need him. I mean, and that's, you know, every team could use Eloy Jimenez, right? Yeah. Nobody's got an outfield so stacked that it's like you're going to grab him and then, you know, pick your spots to have him active. You know, you're going to grab him. He's going to be on your team. He's going to be active. So it is Eloy Jimenez. I'm trying to think back through in periods in the past or even this season when there's been a similar scenario on our hands and seeing what made sense then. And I don't really have anything that I can point to. I know that, you know, like Chris Sale's already been gobbled, you know, like in all the O-season stuff like that. People are already picking him up. And, you know, what are we, you know, month and a half away?
Yeah.
You know, and that granted, that's pitching. But still,
it's kind of like the Framber Valdez deal. When all of a sudden Framber was going to be, like, at one point they thought he was out for the year. Now all of a sudden he was back and people are running to go grab him. But you could get him cheap if you were like a week or two ahead of it type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the key. If you could just be a week early, you're going to save yourself a whole lot of cash that way. It's just so tricky to try to time that. You know, for me, for Eloy, if I really need him, then I'm going to try to pick the week before they announce a rehab thing. You know, if you can kind of mine the news enough to put that together, try to be a week early on that. If my offense is solid, then just kind of, hey, if you leave him there by the time he's starting that rehab, then I'm in.
Yeah, like the Bad X has him for us this season, playing 32 games. So I'll take that. With 9 homers, 20 runs scored, 23 RBIs, hitting .288. Like, that would be a welcomed September edition. I know that much for sure. Like, especially if you need offense, like you said, or if you got a spot, basically block your league from using a guy. So there's a couple angles to it. As people start fading towards football, there's only like half of you still caring about the league. It gets interesting, that's for sure. So something to keep in mind there. Before we get on to some DFS talk, because you are a very, very good DFS player, so I'm looking forward to talking about this. The sticky stuff, I couldn't like not get your thoughts on this because everyone's talking about it. And it's like, to me, there's pros, there's cons. Some hitters want it, some don't. Some pitchers want it, some don't. There's the really, really bad stuff. Then there's like this kind of stuff that just helps a little bit. Well, we've already seen some things change. From a fantasy angle, how are you doing anything? Because I guess it's hard to really have an idea. But some guys are trying to say it's like the old before the season with the ball changing, maybe adding 5 feet to each ball or whatever. Guys are trying to like decipher home runs hit. What are you doing with this lack of sticky substance, maybe improving offense?
Well, so basically it's one of those things, and us DFS players have been trained to kind of recognize this and try to figure out where the profit's going to be in when there's uncertainty. And for me, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how this is going to change things. So I'm going to let others react to the uncertainty. I'm going to let everybody that thinks that they know, like, mm-hmm. you know what, this means that Gerrit Cole is not going to be good anymore. So I'm going to trade him away. Perfect. I'm buying, because 9 times out of 10, the pitcher that I'm going to trade you for Gerrit Cole is also using the sticky stuff and uh-huh. will be affected the same way. You know, like how many different players have to tell us that, hey, all these guys are doing it. Everybody's doing it, you know, except for Jacob DeGrom, of course.
Whatever. Yeah. Or that's like, it's at least like 90% of the guys. Like,
I mean, 90% of the guys. And there's not, you know, when, you know, and I've thought about posing this question for a friend of ours on Twitter there, Derek Carty. I'd like to pose the question to him. When you're looking at spin rate, we've seen a lot of these guys, you know, the spin rate's down 230 RPMs, you know, whatever, 200, 180, you know, 300. 300's obviously, that sounds significant, you know, 300 over the course, you know, if the spin rate on the fastball, if we're talking 250 down to, 2,500 down to 2,200, like anybody can take a look at that and see what percentage that is and know, like, oh, okay, 20%. We might have something here. Yeah. I want to talk to Cardi though and ask him what's like a normal amount of variance, you know, for that, you know, like did we see in 2019, you know, as we went from cold to summer, did we see spin rates, you know, fluctuate from a pitcher by 200? I mean, maybe not even the 250, maybe by 200. Have we seen this before? Like, you know, where's the standard deviation here? I don't think we really know that yet. So obviously, you know, those are all kind of the things, those kinds of uncertainty, people that are going to be willing to react to that uncertainty or whatever, then I'm just going to sit back and try to take advantage of that. You know, like I said, you know, you don't want Gerrit Cole anymore. I'm probably sending you. That's, you know, getting off the sticky stuff too. My main point with the sticky stuff is, you know, I don't have a big opinion on it. You know, sometimes it's okay for us to just kind of admit that we don't know. You don't see a lot of that on Twitter.
Everyone's got an opinion.
You can't be in the middle. Everybody's got an opinion, right? But you know, like with the sticky stuff, I don't really know what's right. I never threw a pitch using any sticky stuff, so I can't tell you if sunblock and rosin is helping you spin a curveball or if it's just helping you grip the fat. I don't know. I haven't done it myself. But I think the most logical thing that I've seen come out of this whole thing, and I'm pretty sure this is the point that that Glasnow was making in his interview, was that you know, if you want to do this kind of thing and get rid of the sticky stuff or whatever, that's fine. You've got to do it in the off season though.
Yeah.
You got to do it in the off season when guys can get in their own backyards before they get to spring training, test it out, look at things. How can we change this? Even do a spring training without it. So when you're building up arm strength, you're building up the arm strength based on, you know, throwing these pitches without it. Like, I think that's a really good point. And, you know, I don't want to talk about myself here, but I've done this in the past where I've felt a little bit of a tweak in my knee when I'm out on a long run and I'm like way out in the middle of nowhere. So the only way back is to just keep running. Right. And that little bit of a tweak in the knee, it's kind of like what we were saying with Jacob DeGrom, you know, and I kind of brace for that knee a little bit. And you know what? I wake up the next day and you know what hurts? It's not
like
that
your ankle or something.
It's like the lower back on the other side, because the way I was compensating for it throws off. Man, these guys are going right in the middle of the major league season when they're ramped up throwing 100 pitches and they're just going to throw all their pitches a different way. I'm kind of with Glasnow there. That wasn't okay.
That's one of the biggest takeaways that I 100% agree with you on. It's like, if you want to get rid of this stuff, fine, but you can't make these changes now. Cause like you said, their body is conditioned for this and you want these guys that are throwing, the art of throwing a baseball is already the most unnatural thing you can do to your arm. Like, that's why women's softball, they can throw 150 pitches every day and it's no biggie. Cause that's natural. This is not natural. That's why guys have issues with their shoulders and their elbows. And now you're asking to change it like that. That's you're asking for more injuries. Like, Glasnow's sadly not going to be the last guy where this happens. It's going to be more guys where this issue happens. So that's a great point that was made. The other point that I've seen, like, I talked to John L from FTN on my last show last week, and some other people have talked about it. You can just get a box of baseballs and not one ball is the same. They either have different stitches, different, every ball is different. So that's a big issue right there too. One's super slippery, one's not. That's why they use stuff to begin with, so they can handle any ball that comes their way. And the third thing that's going to be really interesting, and I even had some guys that played ball on Twitter, like not professional ball players, but guys that played ball before, like in college and stuff, hit me up when I tweeted something. They said, like, I played third base, and the pitcher had me put pine tar in my glove and would throw me. You notice how you see pitchers always throw a ball to, like, a shortstop or something right before he starts? So he hits the pine tar in his glove, not the pitcher's glove, so he's got it. Like, that's still going to be going on.
Yeah. And
that's why it's like there's – baseball trying to do this right now is just baseball ruining baseball. But we don't need a baseball – we love baseball, so let's talk positive. But I just want to get your two cents on that, because I agree people are going to try to make assumptions that we really don't know the answers to. And that's the biggest takeaway, is don't try to reinvent the wheel right now when everyone is kind of in the same, like, clueless boat at the situation. So just wait on that one.
Well, and then not that anybody needs to pile on Major League Baseball anymore, because I mean, they've made themselves such an easy target, but you know, I just want to make sure everybody's on the same page here. You know, this was a knee jerk reaction, right? Mm-hmm. Batting average is down, all of those no hitters and stuff. And everybody's like, yeah, look what MLB did. They changed around the baseball, and now nobody can hit. You know, like, it's changed everything. Like, you know, what are you guys doing over there? And right in the middle of the season, these idiots are all sitting around a room like, hey, let's take away the sticky stuff. Then they're going to throw straight pitches, and guys will start hitting home runs again. And by the end of the year, the numbers will be normal, and nobody will remember what we did. Yep. And look at what they did. Now all the pitchers are getting hurt.
They're ruining it. It sucks. I'm with you. It's like, yeah, they're ruining the best game in the world. So that sucks. But what doesn't suck is your DFS skills and your back writing for FTN Daily. And you focus on single entries, which I really like, because that used to be my go-to, single entries and three maxes. I have a lot of people that listen to my other shows and in my chat rooms that are like 20 max guys. I'm trying to show them how to do 20 max also, but like do like get in the quarter and stuff, like learn before you go play in the big boy things, stuff along those lines. But what is it that's with single entries? Like, you're a single bullet guy. What is it that you like in that nature?
Well, I mean, for me, I play single entry mostly because it's what I have time for. Mm-hmm. You know, I do a pretty good deep dive pretty much every day, like the night before, then again in the morning, kind of keep an eye on the news or whatever. And maybe some new stuff comes out, you know, during the day, and I make a little bit of an adjustment, you know, through the day or whatever. And, you know, then, of course, take a look at the lineups when they come out and whatnot. But it's what I have time for. I don't have time for, you know, building even the 20 max. I did the 20 max in 2018. I was pretty consistent, you know, 20 entry max doing those. And that went pretty well for me. But, you know, 2019 is when I switched over to just strictly single entry. Sticking with that mindset and with those contests, and I had a good year, you know, big year by my standards. I, you know, plenty of homies on Twitter that huge years compared to any of my big years, but you know, it was a big year for me, and I've stuck with it. I enjoy single entry. I think single entry is like the it's the essence of DFS. You know, it's really. You know, single entry I like because it's not you're it's a little bit projections, but it's also a little bit kind of making your plays on the field. You know, when you're making your you know, when you're building 150 lineups, that's a whole different mindset over there. Single entry is kind of you make your cash lineup and then maybe make a couple of, you know, choice pivots off of that that are going to be enough of a pivot. That'll give you a chance to get to the top there. So I have a few rules, and the main one is don't enter a contest unless you can max enter it. And I stick to that. I mean,
I tell people that too.
I don't even make in my single lineups. I don't even put them in the three entry maxes. Yeah. You know, just because it's you up against somebody else, and that guy can kind of take a look at the slate and be like, okay, I think the Rockies, you know, they're 10%, but they're in Coors. You know, like a team should never be 10% when they're in Coors. So I'm going to roll with Coors. But you know what? I can kind of hedge against that with Milwaukee. You know, that guy's he's building a couple lineups there, and he can kind of hedge for himself there. And you're only making one lineup. You're at a disadvantage there. And, you know, so those kind of tournaments, anytime – you know, where somebody's able to go out there and, you know, like, the, you know, putting a single bullet, even in the 20 entry max, when you're putting it in there, you know, you're up against guys that are able to, you know, like, for instance, tonight, Heredia for Atlanta. It's not Guillermo. What's his first name? Heredia hit seventh for the Braves tonight. Yeah.
I think it's not Guillermo. No,
it is. Maybe it is Guillermo.
I think it is Guillermo. Yeah.
Came from Seattle. Anyhow. You know, he had a huge
game. Guillermo. It's Guillermo.
Yeah. He had a huge game. You know, he hit like seventh or eighth where for the Braves, and he kind of went off, and the Braves stack was pretty chalky there. But nobody used Heredia because he was like hitting eighth. You know, there's like the pitcher's wedge right in the middle. Even if you want to do a wraparound, you know, grab like the bottom guy and then stack the top of the lineup. He didn't quite fit that because there's a pitcher in the way or whatever. You know, that guy in single entry, like nobody's really grabbing that guy. But when you go into that 20 entry max or whatever, if the Braves are projected for 5.5 runs or whatever, that guy's going to be like 3% owned, you know? So if you're making a single entry, you know, to win like a 20 entry max with your single bullet, I mean, you've got to be taking real shots in the dark every single day. And it's probably going to take you a couple years to bank one. You know, if you're a good DFS player, if you can look through a slate and analyze and kind of pick out where the advantages are in a slate, and you're putting that kind of thought into a single entry tournament, I mean, you're going to give yourself a chance to, you know, win two or three, maybe four tournaments in a year. And with the way single entry goes, you know, if you're going to bink three times in 1 year, you know, you're going to make some good money that way. So
definitely. So your first rule is make sure you can enter it, which I agree, because someone asked me the other day, how do you do 150 max tournament? I said, I never do it. Like, why? It's like, I don't want to build it. A, I'm not, I don't have the time to build 150 lineups. I don't care what lineup optimizer you're using. I'm not building 150 lineups. And B, I don't have the mindset for that. Like you said, like there's guys like Awesomeo and probably guys at FTN Daily that they live for that stuff because they just sit there on their computer all day putting every type of algorithm in the planet to, they probably had like 25% Guillermo Heredia in 150 lineups or something. Like it's bananas what goes on there where I'm just like, nope, I'm not going to go there. So yeah, I'm 100% with you there. One thing you talk about a lot, and I really love the terminology for one, and I try to tell people about it because sometimes there's good chalk. There is. There's good chalk out there, but there's also chalk donkeys. And I think it's phenomenal because the whole point of baseball, especially compared to other sports, like football, when you know there's this running back and he's going against this horrible defense, he's going to touch the ball 25 times. Like certain situations, like you just can't avoid that. That's tough. But in baseball, where 1-for-4 is a good thing, there's so much variance, avoiding the chalk donkey can be tremendous. So explain to me your chalk donkey.
The chalk donkeys are just – they're just I mostly – when I tweet about the chalk donkeys, I'm like – I'm just kind of being a jerk because I'm mad. Because it's usually because the chalk paid off, right? It's usually like I took a look at the slate and I saw like, okay, it's a bad left-handed pitcher, Giancarlo Stanton. Like, you know, it's one of those things. Like anybody can pull up the numbers and take a look through and parse through and like, oh – weighted runs created plus against, you know, left-handed pitchers, you know, like that kind of thing. And it's like when Giancarlo Stanton's like, you know, 40% owned in a regular slate, like no hitter, whether he's the best hitter against that handedness or not, or he's facing a horrible pitcher, like none of the hitters actually do have a 40% chance of hitting a home run. Like the absolute nuts matchup, I think, you know, somebody kind of did some math behind it, and I think what they came up with was like 30% or something like that, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, so like my strategy basically, it bars me from making those plays. You know, my strategy, single entry GPP, you know, 40% owned, like that, I automatically just can't do it. Doesn't matter how much I like it.
How high is too high of an ownership? Like,
I think 20, about
20%, 15%. What are you going with?
Yeah, I mean,
it's obviously slate dependent. Like size of the slate matters too.
Yeah, no, and it changes quickly too. Like a 15 game slate, 20% is about my ceiling. Maybe even lower than that, 15%. You know, if it's a little bit of a shorter slate, then obviously that changes thing. Maybe 30% is going to be more permissible. 35%, even if it's like a 4 or 5 game slate, you're going to have to deal with that. Everybody's going to be like 30% owned in that case, right? Yep. But like on a main slate though, you know, and it's important too, though, you know, if you've got a site, funny, I should mention, I have a site that, provides ownership projections. I've seen a couple, people, a guy, Mark, I can't pronounce his name. Kneiffer. It's not that uncommon of a name. I don't know why I can't pronounce it. Mark Kneiffer.
Kneiffer,
my friend. Pretty sharp guy. I think I've only been Twitter homies with him, maybe starting in spring training this year sometime or something like that. Not sure exactly when, but sharp guy. And where was I before I had to try to remember somebody's name?
So yeah, ownership projections.
Yeah. So if you have a site that has some good ownership projections, you know, use those. You know, Mark mentions a couple times over the last couple months about how he doesn't look at projections. He looks at ownership projections because, you know, most of us, we follow this enough. Like we know Giancarlo Stanton can hit the ball over the fence when he's facing a lefty, you know, like we kind of know those kinds of things, but what we want to know is betting on it, is the price to bet on it, is it worth it? You know, like, think of things in terms of like if Giancarlo Stanton's like 30% owned, like don't think of it as like 30% owned. Think of it as like you got to bet $100 on Giancarlo Stanton to hit a home run. And if he does hit a home run, you're only going to get back $110. It's only a little profit. It's like I think he's going to hit a home run tonight, but I ain't betting $100 on it for a $10 profit. You know, you got to think of things in those kind of terms. So, you know, my strategy just does not allow me to play those big chalk plays. And those big chalk plays, you know, they come through. They come through often, and especially if you compared DFS in 2021 to DFS in 2016 or whatever.
Yep.
You know, 2016, man, like
pick that thing apart. Man, take it apart. It was beautiful.
Oh, it's just things are so different now. You know, if a guy's 30% owned now, it means the matchup is really good for him. But still, 30%, I mean, that's nobody has that great of a chance to hit a home run. And the profit, if that guy goes out there and has a bad game, you know, tremendous. If you're weighing risk against reward, the profit that is associated or the expected value that's associated with not playing that guy and he doesn't do well is huge. You know, just kind of fading one of those guys can move you up a ton of spots. If you roster that guy and he's 40% owned and he hits a home run, you know, you're only getting a leg up on like, you know, half the field there. So, you know, when you do that, if you've got a leg up on half the field, that guy does hit the home run, guess what? You're still going to need really good pitching and you're still going to need a few other guys to hit home runs. So basically, chalk donkey is just when I'm sour that the chalk comes through. But, you know, at the end of the day, I know what I'm doing. I know what my strategy is. I know that it makes sense. I know that it's sound logic. You know, I'm not trying to minimum cash 5 days a week. I'm trying to win a tournament once a month. If I can win a tournament once a month, I'm going to make a bunch of money this year. I'm going to be super pumped about it. And the thing that you got to remember is to win a tournament once a month, you're probably going to get your dick smashed like 29 days leading up to it. And it's not for everybody. I get it.
Yep, that's one of the biggest things I try to tell people. They get frustrated after like 3 days of losing. I'm like, you're playing in GPPs. You're playing in like 20 max GPPs. You're like, I tell them, you look at the rake, like 23% of the group gets paid in this thing. So that's 77% of people are leaving empty handed. That's just the way it's going to go. And if you want to make a lot of money, you got to be like in that like 3%. Like, it's just like such a random deal. So you have to expect that it's not going to be for the faint of heart is the way I like to say it. So that's true. So another thing you mentioned, and that's why I call it good chalk at times, is it's so different, like you said, from like 5 years ago. There's such good content out there all over the place. So like you said, there's so many guys with projection models or this or that, or like you and I don't even use a ton of projections as much as I just like know looking at numbers every day and stuff like these guys hit so on, so on. But if I know it, then someone else obviously knows it too, which knows it and it goes down the line. The question I have for you, especially in single entries, which is can be different than, you know, multi-entry stuff. We talk about like leverage plays. Like you could stack against a chalky pitcher, or if you say there's a chalky stack, you can go and take, like I've been saying with the Astros lately, you know, don't take the top of the lineup, take like the Miles Straw at 4% and like the Michael Brantley. And if you want to wrap around with an Altuve, the rest of you is so unique, it's still a unique stack. Do you prefer to go to the unique stack route, or do you prefer to fade the chalky pitcher?
Oof. I mean, it's tough. Every slate, I try to zoom out. I try to take a look at the slate and kind of zoom out. And man, that can bring about a lot of different conclusions there. But I will say though, I mean, I underline that one, the wraparound stack is one that I like. I mean, those are good correlation plays. Everybody thinks, you know, everybody understands, you know, now, you know, 5 years ago, it was crazy, you know, yeah. People didn't understand stacking, but you know, now people understand, like if you got the 2-3-4 hitter, you know, and those two guys get a hit and then the next guy hits a home run, you know, you get his 18 points, but those guys get the 2 points. Like one thing happened and you scored like 30 points all at once, you know, like people get that. And so they've kind of caught on. So the 2-3-4 stack isn't super sneaky anymore. But you know, it does make sense, especially, you know, I like to do it with a catcher. If I got like, you know, Martin Maldonado, he's like 2K, he's like minimum priced, and I'm kind of thinking about stacking Houston. You know, he kind of fits in with that. So that's definitely something that I like doing there. I will say with pitching, it's kind of tough, you know, analyzing. You know, like I said, you know, a couple years ago, you know, Jacob DeGrom was in a decent spot, but he was kind of expensive. And in like the Yankees bats were expensive. Like you could get Jacob DeGrom at like 40% ownership. Like people figured that out. It doesn't matter what happens, and DeGrom's like 75% owned. So people have definitely kind of caught up to that whole thing. But one big point for single entry that I really wanted to make on here, this is the biggest conclusion that I've come to so far this season. And I've mentioned this to a few people. Oh, somebody on the Tigers just hit an absolute yak to left field. I don't know who that was. I'm trying to keep an eye on Matt Manning and
see, pitching pretty well.
Jonathan Scope, red hot.
Insanely red hot.
Off Ohtani. Anyhow, so the big point that I wanted to make for single entry GPP is, you know, there's a few things at play here that we've been talking about in terms of with respect to season long and everything else here. And it applies here too, is like the injuries, the amount of what they're doing with pitching now. You know, you've got like the upper, like the 90th percentile pitchers are still going to go out there and do, you know, pitch six or seven innings. You know, Jacob DeGrom is, you know, if he gives up three, well, he's a bad example. If Garrett Cole gives up three runs in the sixth inning, the manager, you know, Boone's going to give him a shot in the seventh inning if the pitch count's not too high or something. You know, everybody else in that rotation, everybody in the Tigers rotation, you know, Casey Mize, you know, if he doesn't pitch well in the fifth inning or whatever, they're not going to push him. You know, like these guys are not going deep in games, and there's a lot of injuries here. Basically the point is you can stack, you can roster two $10,000 pitchers on DraftKings pretty much every single slate and still build out a really good lineup. Pretty much every single slate in 2019, I noticed
not do that.
It, you know, 2019, it took me like 6 weeks to figure it out. I remember the first 6 weeks, things weren't going well. I was like, what the hell am I doing wrong here? And it dawned on me, like every single slate you had, you know, one pitcher that was going to be like 5,800. He's going to be like 6,400. Mm-hmm. And you could take a look at things and put it all together. Hey, this guy's ramped up and throwing 100 pitches a start. He's got a good matchup here. You know, you could put the details together and go like, hey, this guy's probably going to go five or six innings. If they're halfway decent, he's, well, you know, 15 points, that's fine if he's only 5,800. You know, you could do that because Jacob DeGrom was going to cost you 12.8. You know, and that was the way to go. You know, you could get that 40 points from Jacob DeGrom, and if you could squeeze, you know, 15 out of your cheap guy, then you're good to go. You got Jacob DeGrom, and you've also got plenty of budget left for bats. Well, in 2021, Jacob DeGrom's like 10,200 on every single slate.
Crazy.
And Brandon Woodruff, I mean, tonight's not a good example because of Coors, but most of the season, Woodruff, Corbin Burns, these guys are like right around 10,000. You know, they're right around 10,000. And with the injuries, you've got, you know, tonight we had who is the guy, the little guy that bounced around, Abraham's bounced around for everybody, San Diego. He hit cleanup for Atlanta tonight.
Oh, Abraham Almonte.
Yep. Abraham Almonte. Wait, 2,200. Hitting cleanup for a team projected for like 5.5 runs. You know, the Atlanta friggin' Braves, right? He's obviously not Marcel Ozuna, but he's certainly worth paying 40% of the cost of what, you know, Ozuna used to be 5K, and that guy's like 2,300 or whatever. It's just there's good value plays out there. There's just plain good plays that are like 2,800 every single slate out there. There's very rarely is there a slate where I feel like it makes sense to roster a pitcher that's only like 7K. The couple times that I've done it in the last month, I've regretted it. There's just the managers aren't pushing these pitchers. You know, it's not worth it. You know, it's just too easy to spend 20K on your pitching.
Yeah, no, and I think it's a great point. Is like, I'll throw out the Scoobles here and there and have some fun. But if you're doing a single entry, like you said, I would definitely make sure you get two close to aces if you can. Like, some slates just suck and you're just stuck with stuff. But for the most part, you can make two aces work because the value is there. You mentioned Almonte. I said Straw earlier. Straw's been into 2Ks forever. You got Fraley's been smoking it for Seattle. He's been like 2,600. There's always guys that are cheap. There's guys you can mix and match. And at worst, there's so many bad pitchers out there. You can get like a cheap like three-man stack of like Tigers who have been hitting good in some games, or even the Royals for a while. One of the Orioles are always cheap. I get suckered in to Cedric Mullins. He's always low 3K. You got like all these dudes cheap as hell, and they're productive. So you can make it work, like you're saying. And then you get your two pitchers. You get like a four-man stack of a loaded-ass team because you're already different over here.
Yeah.
You're sitting pretty. So there's ways to do it for sure.
And there, like one last little note about it too, like just, you know, if I take a look at the pitching and I'm kind of determining like, hey man, you know, Corbin Burns and Jacob DeGrom's pitching, I really like them both. People are going to be on both of them or whatever. It feels like DeGrom's going to be 70% like he always is, and Corbin Burns probably going to be 40%. You can go chalk pitching. Go ahead and grab that. Make sure that you don't go and like roster the White Sox against a lefty. Yep. or something like that. That's going to be super popular. You know, like if it's a bigger slate, if your bats are all going to be 5-7% owned or whatever, then go ahead and go with that chalky pitching. And then the inverse of that, if you don't like the chalk pitching, then feel free to roll with some chalk bats because your pitcher is going to be weird. You know, it's that's a big one. I like to play single entry, and I don't like to play the single entry with 5,000 entries. You know, I'd rather spend up, pay a little bit. You know, it hasn't been a thing this year for whatever reason.
Yeah, so bad this year.
Yeah, but like the $50 single entry or whatever, there's like 400 entries in it or whatever. I mean, you don't have to get too wild to win a tournament with 400 people. That's a great way to do things.
Yeah, that's one thing I've always said, and you just nailed it, is you don't have to be weird everywhere. You just got to get weird in a couple spots. Like, don't think you have to be super, super. You do in like the 20s and the 150 maxes, yes. In a single entry, you don't. It's just like you said earlier, you make your cash lineup and make like two tweaks or something if you want, whatever. Right. You can do something like that. And if you are a person that likes the cheaper entries, the tournaments have been so bad, but they've been filling so fast. They put like smaller, like say a $5 single entry out later. So you might not make as much up top, but now instead of having a 4,000 person tournament, it's now like a 1,200 person. Like you can move things around that way as well. So something to keep an eye on. That's a whole other podcast, contest selection and stuff like that. But you can do that as well. Let's hit on a couple players real quick and then bounce on out of here. Some guys that have either been playing really well. Most of these guys actually been playing pretty well. One guy, not so much. But how do you feel going forward the rest of this season? And we'll start, I kind of hinted at him in a cheap DFS play, but Cedric Mullins has been absolutely amazing this year. It sucked on Thursday. He got hit in the head with a off-speed pitch, so he's fine. Reports are good, but it looked a little scary at first. But he's been the leadoff hitter. He gave up switch hitting, which definitely is working in his favor. But the dude's hitting .320 on the year. He's got 9 homers. He's got 12 stolen bases. He's getting it done, Brock. Are you a believer in what he's got going forward?
And not to, bring up the old dirt or whatever there, but that hit by pitch looked an awful lot like the pitcher trying to throw a curveball without any stuff on his hand type of thing. Kind of a bummer. That's a symptom that we're going to see going forward. That's something that MLB is calling those guys up for.
McCutchen put out a tweet when they said that, and it was like the kid from Little Giants. That's how I'm coming to the plate. That's why I have to walk to the plate now because of like these guys have no control of what they're throwing. They're gonna throw in godly stuff with no control now. I gotta like.
I didn't see that. I really enjoy the social media interaction from some of the players.
There's a lot of good ones. Yeah,
that is good stuff. But yeah, man, Cedric Mullins. I just last year I'd have felt like I lucked into him if I was rostering him. This year he looks like a dude. Like you mentioned, big thing there. Doing away with the switch hitting. The batting average is up. So hitting left-handed, it's probably not seeing every single left-handed pitcher getting some days off there with Austin Hayes being against the tougher lefties maybe. So maybe that's a little bit with the batting average there. You know, I'm like our friend, big Johnny L, MLB moving average, like he likes to say, pop the hood, take a look inside. The numbers look pretty good, man. Swing and strike rates down. Probably a symptom of just, not having to try to hit right-handed against left-handed pitching any longer. But those numbers look good. He's swinging at pitches out of the zone even less. This is only 3 years now, 2019, 2020, and then, this year's shorter sample size. But those numbers are trending in the right direction there. So I kind of like that. Leading off for Baltimore, like an offense that I kind of think is going to in the season like decent. Like I think, I know that they haven't been great. They're not like top 20 or anything like that, but I think that they end up being a decent offense and, especially they're, it's not Coors Field or anything like that, but you can kind of pick out the good spots for Cedric Mullins. If they're going to be at home all 7 days for a week, you really want to, you're going to have him in your lineup anyway, but you're going to really want him in your lineup there. That's a great ballpark for left-handed bats there. The stolen bases are backed up. The sprint speed is like 88th percentile. They're good. He's not a StatCast guy. He's not a barrel rate guy. The StatCast page is a little bit blue there. But if he's being more selective and he's hitting on the top of the lineup, He's going to drum up at least the counting stats to make it worth your while.
That's a great point you make there, because like the 9 home runs is already like gravy for him. You weren't drafting Cedric Mullins for the power. You wanted the speed and maybe some average. He's out producing everything. So if he just continues to just get on base like he's doing, get his doubles, just 18 doubles. So like keep it in doubles, get on base, score some runs, steal some bags, and he should. You're going to be very, very happy with that.
There's a couple of those guys hitting behind him that have – they've got to be better in the second half than they've been so far in the first. You know, Mountcastle comes to mind first. They're obviously
really getting going. So
yeah, some are getting going. Yeah,
it's a young team. It's a young team. So like we they'll go in waves. Like there's going to be some slumps on that squad, but there's a lot of fun to be had there. Another guy, a young guy that Austin Riley. Everyone loves him for his power, but usually he's a big time batting average dump when he's had his chances in the big leagues. This year he's hitting .291. He's cooled off a little bit. He was really crushing it for a while there. Like projection sites have him hitting about .250 the rest of the season, but still like 15 more home runs the rest of the way. Would give him close to 27 to 30 home runs this season. Are you an Austin Riley believer, or are you kind of worried that the slump might still continue with that batting average?
Okay, so I took a look at Austin Riley, and my initial read was like, you know, you're looking there, he's hitting .291. Like I said, that's awesome. .374 batting average on balls in play. That's going to come back down to earth. I mean, it's not going to have 374 BABIP or whatever. He's kind of like a 290, 300 BABIP guy, like an average BABIP guy for his career. So the BABIP probably comes back and the average probably comes down some. But, you know, the strikeout rate somewhere about, you know, career average a little bit, you know, it's a little bit higher than last year, but that's kind of skewed because last year was such a short season there. You know, he did good last year, only 24% strikeout rate. I mean, if he can get back to a 24% strikeout rate, I think he's really going to be a force, but he had to kind of sell out for some of the power in order to do that last season. So I kind of think, you know, maybe if he's going to strike out a little bit more this year, but he is, you know, going to hit for a little bit more power, I think that's a worthwhile trade-off. I'm kind of thinking back to that same hot streak that I think that you're remembering. There was a couple week period there. He hit like, you know, probably 5 or 6 home runs over 2 weeks there, and was in our DFS lineups. Like
he was basically free.
Almost, yeah, he's super cheap. And, you know, another thing that I like about him is the opportunity cost has improved for him just by virtue of Marcelo Ozuna not going to be in that lineup any longer. So I like the idea of Riley being able to bat like 4th or 5th or whatever for pretty much the rest of the season. Travis d'Arnaud is still a ways away from returning that lineup. So looking under the hood for Austin Riley here, and the numbers are improving. You know, like I said, that strikeout rate was up a little bit there. But looking – where did the plate – okay, so out of the zone swing has ticked down, 19 down to 2020, down to this year. It's improving each season there. The swinging strike rate is getting better. I mean, that first season he came up, obviously he had all that power, 20% swinging strike rate when he came up, which is like unheard of. Like we don't even have pitchers, you know, really that have a 20% swinging strike rate. But, you know, this year down to 12.5%. So definitely good news on Riley. I can see his K rate improving a little bit there. So even with that BABIP coming down a little bit there, I still think he probably does, you know, like what you said, you know, hits .250, hits .260, which if everybody else is hitting .232 like they have been, that's not a sink on your batting average at all. So I like Austin Riley. I'm buying.
Yeah, I'm buying him. And a couple things there is, A, we got to keep remembering, like if we keep instilling, batting average is down so much this year. So .250, .260 is like really good still. So that's one thing to keep in mind. And he's going to hit the middle of the order. Like you said, like he's going to keep crushing. That's a very good offense. They're going to put up a lot of runs in Atlanta. So, yeah, it's going to be very productive regardless of the – like you didn't draft him for his batting average to begin with. Like right now, he's giving you that as an extra. You just wanted power and some run production. So you're going to get that going forward.
I mean, it's kind of a point that we made with Baltimore. Like you just said there, you know, that offense is going to be better. That Atlanta offense, I mean, it still has two of the best hitters in the National League hitting the top of that. You know, Ozzie Albies is looking pretty good this year too. I mean, if he's going to hit 4th or 5th behind those guys have got to – I mean, Acuna might not outproduce his first 2 months, but those other two guys probably will, and they're going to take him along with it to a certain extent there.
Yeah, I mentioned it, I think, on someone's show. I don't know what show it was, but I mentioned it. Like Freddie Freeman – he hit his 16th home run on Wednesday. It's like the quietest 16 home runs I've seen because everyone thinks he's playing horrible because he's hitting 239, but his XBA is like 309 or something. Like the dude is going to go on some tear. So now he's going to be on base and all he's like, it's just, it's going to domino effect to really help Riley out. Another one last bat here before we head to a couple pitchers, Adelis Garcia. He was the talk of the town for the first couple months of the season. Just couldn't be stopped. He's got 16 home runs in the year, even stole seven bases, which was outstanding. He's hitting 274. That average is slowly coming down because strikes out a lot, and it's just, you know, regression has come to him. You're not going to get the best of batting averages going forward, but I'd imagine you still get some power speed the rest of the way. What's your thoughts on Adelis Garcia going forward? Are you still like, I'm going to plug him in and play him all the time? Because I used to play him every day in DFS, and I haven't even been playing him there lately because it's just he's hit a wall right now.
Well, I feel bad to report this. I kind of root for every player, even the Giants. Even the Giant when, you know, whatever, year and a half ago when I pulled up Mike Yastrzemski and was, you know, take a look at it or whatever. You know, I kind of like, oh, man, if he just does this, he could just be a little bit better. Like, I always feel like I'm rooting for the player. And Adelis Garcia, I'm rooting for him. But I have to admit, you know, we did a pod a couple weeks ago, and he was one of the guys that we brought up that we were kind of talking about. And I think me and Matt and Maddie, all three of us agreed, like, sell. The strikeout rate is, like, way too high. There's no way he's going to be able to do it. It was just one of those super typical, the guy shows up, nobody has a scouting report on him, nobody knows how to pitch to him. He's out there hitting home runs, he hits everybody's fastball over the fence, and as soon as he gets, you know, whatever, a few weeks, gets a month into the league, the book is out on him a little bit, and the league makes an adjustment, and, you know, we've heard this a million times, the difference between the great players and the kind of not as great players, the difference is how fast can they adjust back to that. And so the league's made an adjustment to Adelis Garcia, and so far he hasn't adjusted back. I don't think my dude's hit a home run in 3 weeks. I mean, he had a weekend there. He had like five home runs over the course of 5 days. Kind of a crazy deal there. And then, yeah, I think it's 3 weeks now, and he has only two extra base hits, two doubles. The league's adjusted back to him, and he's a little bit slow to adjust. Like you said, I think there's going to be some power there. It's great. He's in Texas. They got nothing to lose.
Exactly. So
he can run. I think he's going to be useful, but I think your opportunity to sell high on him has passed you by a couple weeks.
Yeah, selling high is going to be tricky now, but like you said, is they have no reason not to play him. So he's going to get the playing time in Texas. And it is a game we talk about with prospects all the time. Like, they come out banging because the first thing teams start to do is, can you hit my fastball? Okay, well, he hit the fastball. Now it's like it's Pedro Serrano time. Can you hit a curveball? Figure it out, kid. If not, like, and there's scouts watching them. There's holes. You got to make those adjustments. So we'll see how it goes. I think he'll still be quasi-productive, but the massive production we got, not happening anymore. A couple pitchers to talk about real quick. We'll head on out of here. Eduardo Rodriguez, this is a guy that, I was pulling for tremendously because the story is amazing. Like, he battled back from, you know, had the heart condition due to COVID and everything. Awesome story. Seems like a great guy. I've been a fan of his for fantasy for years. Value was great in drafts, in my opinion. He's always been a workhorse. He's had a rough go of it. Four or more in runs in, like, eight of his last nine starts. But you look at his ERA compared to his xFIP. It's almost a three-run differential. His K-to-walk percentage is over 20%. Like, there's some things pointing in the right direction. But then when you watch him pitch, there's other things going like, I don't know if this is the direction I want to be going in. So what's your thoughts on Erod?
Yeah, he's somebody I didn't draft him. There was a little too much uncertainty for him, and I felt like he was being drafted with a level of certainty. No, I guess that's not necessarily true. He was like in the 200 range, top 200, just right on the edge of top 200.
Like the Marcus Stroman world.
Yeah, so he was a little bit of a discount there with what we were kind of probably expecting him to be able to do. I like I said, I don't have any exposure, but I was just taking a quick look there. I mean, super unlucky, obviously. I mean, first thing that pops up, 62% strand rate. Nobody does that for more than a couple. I mean, it's kind of amazing that he's been able to post that low of a strand rate over the course of 2 months. So not something that's going to continue there. That strand rate moves back up, like, I think 78, 80%. Somewhere in that range, pretty normal there. So that is a significant change there. He's striking out a lot of guys. The K per nine, I know we prefer K rate, but I have to scroll all the way down there to see K rate. K rate 27%, 25 in 2019. I mean, he was really good in 2019. Mm-hmm. And the K rate's up 2%, which is not huge, but it's something. The walk rate's down 2%. I mean, he's improved his K minus walk rate. I mean, if you can be that good in 2019 and improve in strikeouts and walks, you would expect, you know, pretty good results there. So obviously the results have, they've definitely been bad. 6.2 ERA. How many guys have a 6.2 ERA? I mean, not many.
Luis Castillo raises his hand. No, it's kidding.
Luis Castillo. I mean, his thing wasn't luck. He was just shitty pitcher for a little period of time there, but yeah, just taking a look at the numbers and then, you know, the expected ERA, the xFIP, all the different numbers, literally every indicator is telling you that Erod is going to be fine. So I can roll with that.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that, like, I haven't been starting him every week, but I'm afraid to drop him because there's other guys like Dylan Bundy. We kind of hinted at, I'll drop Dylan Bundy. Like, I'm kind of there now. There's things with Erod where it's, I could see a positive angle starting to come up with him. It's just a matter of can he pull it off. So I'm a little bit more patient with him. We'll see how much longer, though, because the amount of patience is getting shorter and shorter. Now, a guy that I was patient with early because the season started out a little rocky for Frankie Montas, two of his first four starts, six earned runs or more. It wasn't great, but he's really started getting it out, like three earned runs or less in all but one start since that start in April 21st, that fourth start. He's been basically his last 10 starts, only one start over with four earned runs or more. He's been very, very good. I think I'm in on Frankie Montas. I'm comfortable now. It's kind of questionable at times in my start with him this week. What's your thoughts on Frankie Montas?
Yeah, I kind of like Montas. He actually, the podcast I was on like last week, they kind of brought him up and my answer was like shrug. Like, I don't know. Sure. No, I don't know. I didn't really have an opinion. I'm kind of taking a look now and, you know, I did a little bit more of an evaluation on him on, I believe it was Tuesday he pitched. And so I was taking a look at him for DFS for that day. And I took a little bit more. I like what I see, you know, that velocity kind of started out, you know, almost 98 miles an hour or whatever, but tailed down. But, you know, between 97.5 and 96. So he throws hard there. You know, I pulled up his Brooks page. Take a look through there, the game log on Brooks, and you can see pitch movement, horizontal, vertical. Brooks is fantastic website. His velocity down his pitches. I mean, things are just pretty consistent with him. The velocity, all the different movement numbers on there, everything just kind of looks like a flat line across the season from start to start there. So I'm not really seeing anything super fluky with what's happened with Montas so far. And I mean, he's definitely been solid. He's, you know, 4.2 ERA is not our favorite, but another guy, you know, xFIP 3.9, a little bit better than that. The 1.3 home runs per nine, you know, he's been kind of a guy. He gave up some home runs last year. That was a little bit of a problem, but doesn't seem like he's brought that problem in 2021 so far. The BABIP's not crazy. Strand rate's not crazy. I mean, he's been solid, and there's not a lot of luck behind it, so I'm kind of with it.
Yeah, I'm with it too. Like, it was one thing, it was tough to see if he can go deep enough into games or this or that. There's always a question mark on it. It's kind of like you, as those last couple starts in DFS, I've started to look deeper and deeper, and I'm like, I think he's figuring it out. Like, it seems like things are – this is. I tell people this all the time, and I'm pretty sure you'll agree with me. I know Vlad agreed with me a couple weeks ago. Playing DFS is maybe a better season-long player because you see things so much more. Like, I tell people, like, you don't have to play DFS, and I know I'm not a DFS like expert compared to many. Just listen to my 30-minute show every day, because at least you'll get a run through of players that are doing things. Like, you'll get things for your season long team that'll help. So I think it's a huge asset to another part of DFS. I think is very undervalued.
So. You know what? When we get to Sunday night, when we get to Sunday afternoon, you know, Fab is what it is or whatever. But like Sunday, when I'm taking a look at my teams and the inevitable. Taking the inventory, who's coming out, you know, for the week, who got hurt, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, I'm making a lot of those decisions. I don't need to look up anything.
Yep.
You know, there's the periphery, right? There's like Dom Nunez, you know, are the Rockies at home? If they're not at home, he's not going to be my catcher this week or whatever. There's those kinds of decisions that you're going to pull up on your phone and take a look at or whatever, but you're absolutely right. Being a DFS guy, you know, is this guy playing right now? Is he on the field? Is he playing well? What's, you know, the team context, all those kinds of things, it's right down the back of your hand, you know, just like that.
Yep, it's beautiful. Last guy, I can't wait to get your thoughts on him because Taiwan Walker is just I'm so torn on him. I don't have him rostered anywhere, but I seem to lately decide, okay, DFS, he's cheap. We're going to play. We're going to dance and see what happens because he's been outstanding. 12 Ks in his last start, a career high. But then he has those occasional starts with 2 Ks. And you're like, okay, what the hell's going on here? He's had walk issues. Those seem to be kind of remedied for now. What's your thoughts on Walker? Because he's been better than he's been bad. I'll put it that way. But he's still been a headache to me.
Yeah, I like Taiwan Walker just because, God, this is going to be a weird thing to explain. This is one of those things that kind of exists in my head. And I just kind of roll with it when I'm, doing my teams. And I'm with you. I didn't draft him this spring. I didn't really. I was a little bit worried that they were going to sign him. And, Syndergaard was going to come back on some kind of timetable. At that point in time, Carlos Carrasco was still part of the conversation there. I was like, it's going to get to a point that this guy very well could be the sixth best pitcher on a team that's not going to run a six-man rotation. I was a little bit worried about that kind of thing. So I don't have him. But, DFS-wise, I have been impressed. I mean, he's been solid. The 13 strikeouts that last start we're not going to expect that or whatever. That's not going to come around too long. For what it's worth, I mean, he's throwing pretty hard in that start, 94.5 miles an hour. But I am expecting a solid pitcher, from here on out. He's definitely a guy he's super weird. So I like him because – 3 years ago, he was a reverse splits guy. 4 years ago, reverse splits. He was a guy. Oh man, he came to town. I ended up going to the game. He came to town to face the Dodgers, and I think every right-handed power hitter on the Dodgers hit a home run off in that game. super predictable, and people just automatically. This is like my one of my favorite things for DFS. Nobody plays Juan Soto when he faces left-handed pitching, but he's a beast. His power against left-handed pitching. I mean, he's a beast,
Juan Soto hits everybody, people. He's the best.
same thing. Mike Trout is even a little bit of a reverse splits hitter. As good as Mike Trout is, he's a little bit better against righties. Mm-hmm. But he's going up against a bad lefty. He's 35% owned. He goes up against a bad righty and he's 16% owned. It's crazy. It doesn't make sense. Anyway, I'm sorry, man. I'm full of tangents. But Taiwan Walker, so he made a conscientious change to his repertoire, to his strategy. Somebody, I don't know what organization, I don't know what front office did it. Somebody took a look at his stuff and analyzed the results that he was having and made some kind of suggestion to him. And he is now a traditional splits pitcher. He is super tough on right-handed hitters. And can be a little bit susceptible to the lefties, but definitely gets a swing and misses against the lefties there. And so for me, a pitcher he's not super old or anything like that. He's not too old. He was former top prospect. He's 28. He's probably right there in his prime. And he's gone out and made big adjustments there. I'm kind of expecting success from him. I know that that's a little bit narrative-y and not necessarily the number analysis that we're used to doing on guys. But he's pitched well. He's a little lucky. The BABIP's kind of low, 246 for a batting average balls in play. There's not a lot you can do that where you can expect that to continue, but 9.5 strikeouts per nine. He's missing some bats there. Like I said, 13 strikeouts, probably not going to expect that anymore, but as long as DraftKings, keeps pricing him like 8K. Yep. I mean, as long as he ain't facing Boston or something.
You can rock and roll. No, I'm with you, and don't worry about not being too statsy. I'm much more narrative street guy than that's why Toby and I on Tuesdays. Toby's a stat guy. I do the narrative speak, so I have no problem with that at all. But yeah, it's weird with Walker. It's like, 'cause I remember the horror stories. Like we've played this long enough where you remember the good and the bad of every guy, and Walker's just, I've never gotten him right. It feels like, but this year seems like he said he did a pitch mix change. They did something with him where things are starting to go in the right direction. Because, remember, even when he went to Arizona after that trade, he got hurt, and then he started pitching for him, and it was just destruction. It wasn't good at all. So looks like he might have figured it out now, so that'll be good to go. But, Brock, that's going to wrap it up for us this evening. It's been a pleasure, my friend. Before we head out, plug away everything you got going on, where they can find you, all that good stuff.
Yeah, first of all, I mean, I got to say, I've done a lot of podcasts. That's about as much information as ever been packed in an hour and 23 minute long podcast. We cover a lot of ground. We covered every different kinds of fantasy baseball there is. We touched on pretty much every single team. And still, man, that was a lot of fun. I appreciate you having me on. As for my content, I want to plug FTN Daily. Just tomorrow is going to be my second post there as far as writing a single entry GPP article. Most sites have guys writing great articles and stuff like that, but most of those guys are guys that are playing 150 entry max. Mm-hmm. They're playing 20 entry max. They're building tons of lineups. They're looking at things through different lenses than you and I are looking through. And so I'm writing an article based on single entry GPP, and I think that's going to be unique to our site, and I think it's going to be very successful. I don't win every day, but I'm making worthy bets every day, and I'm going to try to pass that along on FTN Daily. That's going to be available on Tuesdays and Fridays. And then, of course, the FTN Fantasy team, me and Matt and Maddie, the guys doing our podcast, not every single week during the season. We've been more bi-weekly, but you can catch us there. And then I'm sure anybody else listening, you want me to be on your podcast, I will tell you in advance. I'd love to. Hit me up.
Yeah, Brock is an awesome dude, as you can tell. It's like the conversation is easy with Brock, and it's not just because I've known him now for 6 years, as we established at the beginning of the show. It's just he's an easy dude. He loves baseball, and like I tell everybody on my show, first timers, we're just here to talk baseball. And if you love talking about baseball, it's an easy conversation. So it's always fun with Brock. Good dude, and as always, my friend, thanks for joining me. I can't wait to do it. We're doing a lot sooner this next time.
You know what we got to do again? That one last year we talked about the
strike season
or whatever.
The strike season, yeah.
That was a good fun. Time, man. We got to come up with a new topic and do another flashback pod.
Because sadly, I'm not going to go this deep, but I have a feeling next season we might have some free time as well. Ooh. So it's just unfortunately, but that'll be a whole nother podcast. We can talk about it then. But everybody, again, check out Brock on Twitter at BrockNessMonster. I'm at BDentric. If you go rate and review to the podcast on iTunes, I would truly appreciate it. But this was Bench with Bubba, episode 379. We'll catch you guys next time.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.